You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Slightly favours the right footer here, but Griffiths, having got the goal, goes again.
Quick by the tries it, don't know. Long we over. Oh, what a goal! What a goal! McCullough saved it in. Barry Ferguson.
Dalglish again.
Okay, where to begin with what happened in Dublin last night? Scotland thrashed by Republic of Ireland 3-0, a terrible showing and one that I think requires a lot of head scratching, soul searching, you name it. We're here to try and do just that. It's Gordon Sheehan and Graham Brown on the pod with me, Andy Barge, to pick the bones of that monstrosity, really, that we witnessed over in Ireland. We went in to the game, Gordon and Graham, with a bit of positivity after a comfortable win against Armenia, but it's one step forward and four, five or six back, really, because, Gordon, we watched the game together. I'll come to you first. It was diabolical.
Yeah, it was. There's probably no other word to describe it. It was flat, it was sluggish, it was an unthreatening performance. We barely created anything. Our best chances of the game were gift-wrapped to us by their players gifting the ball to us from goal kicks that we couldn't convert. It was an incredibly tired performance, an unbelievably disappointing performance. I mean, look, the players have had a long season, but everyone's had a long season. The Ireland players have probably had quite a long season as well, and they somehow managed to put in a performance of quality. I mean, I think I said this in my tweet at the end of the game last night, that if you look at the stats for the game aren't actually that different. They score a couple of goals out of thin air. They score one from a corner. They took their chances. We didn't. I think 3-0 is maybe a slightly unfair reflection on the game, but they were utterly deserved winners. There's no debating that whatsoever. And I think in terms of going away from home to a team that were really at a low ebb, I mean, the stats are incredible as to how their form, how long it had been since they'd won a competitive home game, how many goals they score. They've not scored 3 goals in a game for so long. And we went there and completely capitulated. And this is it. You know, we've all watched Scotland long enough. We've seen Scotland lose plenty of games in our time. And yes, we'll often get beaten by good teams, and we'll get beaten by better teams, and that's fine to a certain extent. But to go to a team that were objectively not as good as us in almost every conceivable way, and to get turned over like that you're looking back to Kazakhstan, which we all felt was the nadir of a horrendous Scotland performance and result, but. That's my only comparison point to how bad yesterday was.
I think it's probably I think it definitely is a fair point that if you look at the squads, most people would say and expect Scotland to go and beat Ireland. I think, I don't remember who it was, it was some famous sportsman or woman in history that I think said the hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. There's a perfect case of it last night. Look at the defending for the corner. Defending from a corner, you're taught this from the minute you tie a pair of football boots when you're eight or whatever. Defending set pieces is nothing other than desire, really. Bit of organisation, obviously, thrown in, but you see the ball, you want it, you have to make it yours. Can't even remember the Ireland guy that stuck it over the line in the end. Our boys are just ball watching. He's the one that's anticipating where it's going to go to meet Shane Duffy's header, and he gets there first and sticks it away. Tony Ralston, who I actually thought started the game really well. Graham had a couple of good runs down the line, the right wing, and looked quite promising. He's just completely either switched off or given up, and Troy Parrott runs past him and then has a one-on-one header that he sticks away well. The third one is an absolute thunderbolt of a shot. That can happen from time to time, and there was no way back from there on. But the first two goals, Graham, is just head and hands stuff. I don't think me and Gordon anyway could believe what we were seeing when we were sitting in the old school house in Glasgow watching it. I'm sure the same for everyone else.
Yeah, I think you can only call it sleeping. The really interesting part of that first goal was that's a Scotland tactic. Flight it all the way to the back post, nod it across. No, some dead easy. Right across there. And like you say, they didn't go after it. And when you look at the three players that are standing watching the goal go in for the first one, I couldn't believe that. I was like, back to your desire point and how you defend corners and that you're up for it. I mean, you're 20 minutes into the game, this whole chat about being tired and whatever else, you know, we were 2-0 down within, 30 minutes, 35 minutes, whatever it was. But in 20 minutes, they just didn't have that desire. It was an easy header back across the goal. And when you look at in fact, there's four defenders because Grant Hanley's kind of in the middle. So you've got the three defenders in the back post and they're watching two Ireland players who are both in front of them, in front of all of them, and then knock it in. And then the second goal, you know, you're right. I mean, it was that right-hand side, Ralston and Hendry, who just didn't know what was going on. I mean, again, a simple ball over the top and, you know, Parrott runs in behind them and scores it. And then even the third one, I mean, we'd be talking about that goal. I mean, that's like Fadi-esque from Paris. I know that's what they came up in the commentary like. Fadi was a bit further out. But we'd be talking about that goal for months. Again, easy. He was in acres of space. He had time to turn, shoot. No one was on top of him. And we're 3-0 down. And back to your point, and I think Gordon was talking about, when you look at the stats, and these ones tell, Scotland 9 shots, 2 on target, Ireland 6 shots, 5 on target. And the Armenia one's even worse. I mean, you know, if you roll in defence sleeping and our inability to hit the target, I mean, that is a recipe for disaster. And I think last night can only be summed up as a disaster.
Where does it rank, Gordon? You picked out Kazakhstan there. Over the last 10 years or some sort of hypothetical recent times bracket, I would say that probably the two Georgia results away and Kazakhstan are the ones that I thought about introducing Macedonia 1-0 under Burley to the mix, but last night feels worse to me. I mean, we've given Scotland a lot of credit really since we started doing this podcast because we've been on a bit of an upward trajectory for seemingly some time. I remember after the Denmark game 2-0 at Hampden last year, and I think some of my opening words to the podcast were, it's a great time to be a Scotland fan. And since that game, that's 5 matches played now, 1 win. It's we're not quite in dire straits, I think. I think that would be a stretch too far, but certainly cause for concern.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Although, of course, caveat that at least two of those games were friendlies that we did lead in, were not for a dodgy penalty against Poland. We would have beaten them. We really should have seen out a 2-0 lead against Austria, but again, that's a separate conversation. I think what stands that game last night out against most other poor results or losses in, like you said, recent times, is that at no point really through that game did we look like we were going to come back into it at all. And I think that to me is the biggest worry, you know, and it was the same against Kazakhstan in the Kazakhstan game. You know, we were 2-0 down in inside 10, 15 minutes. And beyond that, there would just seem to be no possible chance that we would come back and take something from that game. And that is just the most worrying thing, because then it makes it feel like, did the players on the pitch, did they just accept that that was what was happening in the game and that was that? I mean, I thought Andy Robertson's post-match comments were very, very interesting. You know, he alluded to some quite serious disagreements and arguments in the dressing room at full time. He said that, you know, the players, every single player lost their individual battles and they let the manager down. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of, obviously since last night, talking about Steve Clark and talking about whether he should stay or go as Scotland manager. Funnily enough, actually, a lot of the people that I see talking about Steve Clark, they always seem to miss a little bit in the timeline. They talk about, oh, he got us into the Euros through the back door. He won a penalty shootout, but that was all Alex McLeish's work anyway. And then we got to the Euros and we chucked that. And then he chucks the Ukraine playoff and now this, which conveniently misses the World Cup qualifying campaign, for, as we discussed last week, was our best campaign in a long time. So Clark has the credit to continue. He absolutely has earned that. And the players, at least by what Andy Robertson's saying, they know they've let him down, because it was them out on the pitch that did that yesterday. And the performance was so far below what it had to be. So I think they're lucky they've got the game on Tuesday. But where to even start with what you change, I don't know. But a lot has to change.
Okay, Graham. So Robertson says that the players let the manager down. So where is the finger to be pointed here? Is it at the setup, an organisation and tactical approach from Clark, sticking with this formation without Tierney? Or is it the players' heart and fight and desire on the pitch? Because I suppose once they cross the line, it's up to them. Clark really can't do much except move a few pieces around. So is it a toxic mix of both last night, or do you think one is more significantly influential than the other?
I think it's a toxic mix of both. I think that's a good way of describing it. I think there's a couple of things, and if you look at both games, you look at some things that were going on, and I that the whole, you know, Kieran Tierney, what's the formation without one player? I think that shouldn't come into any equation. Do you know, it shouldn't be, we changed the entire formation round one. I know we did that in the pre-match one before the recent games and talking about that. I actually think there's some real wrong things in here. Scott McTominay plays for Man U in a position, and we think it's okay to shove him in as a defender at halftime, playing in his normal position for half the game, and then bring on Billy Gilmore and slam him back into defence. In all the Scotland matches of recent, I don't know of a player that just keeps getting moved about the pitch like that. So there's one problem I think we need to fix. I think it was interesting, Ross Stewart coming on yesterday, and you know, the belief in Shea Adams. I think it was good not playing Lyndon Dykes, because there was interesting commentary again during both games about if they play Lyndon Dykes, they end up just, the defence feels they've got no option but just to hump it up towards them, knock it down and hope, literally hope, that it will come down to a Scottish player and they'll put it in the back of the net. And then you see the shots on target ratio, it's like, that just doesn't work. They need to play from back to front all the way through and use the quick players they've got, because we just don't have an out-and-out striker that puts the ball in the net. So I think that the whole settling down of a formation, I mean, he's tried it twice. You know, he does keep moving about the formation, and we're talking about whether we do a flat back four, this 3-4-2-1 that we tried last night, which didn't really work. But I think the formations is one thing, in playing players out of position that they're not used to, because we feel we have to play the best players, even although they're not playing in their normal position, just because they're good players. And I think the belief in the team has to get back in. I actually think the Ukraine game took a lot of mental, you know, strength to come out of it, you know, in terms of that part of it, and are they actually on it? And then you have the performance last night, you know, from a team we should have beat, you know, there's no excuses for not being Ireland, but to get, in effect, humped 3-0. You know, I don't know how they go to Armenia, and again, it's a tough place to go. It's going to be really hot. They'll be really worried. Because back to that, if they win, we've still got a chance. We've got to play Ukraine twice. Those are two big matches. You know, if we can walk out with 6 out of 9, at least we go into the back half, you know, the last three games with some hope. If we don't get a result on Wednesday night, you know, I think all their heads will be down and it's going to be hard to pick up. Because actually, I think September, pre-season, maybe they'll have a rest, all that stuff about resting. And then they come back fresh and then you never know what they can do. But I think it's the mix. It needs a top to bottom. And I think Stevie Clark put that in his comments. He says, we need to go away and look at what's gone wrong and try and work out a way back for them.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Speaking of excuses, Clark wasn't interested in the tiredness one. He just said it was an all-round poor performance. The players are at the same level, all of them, on the park. Granted, some have played more games than others. Andy Robertson played loads, I'm sure, more than, for example, I don't know, James McLean did. But, you know, they have been long seasons in the English Championship as well. Clark also, publicly anyway, wouldn't criticise his players. He's not deviating from form there. I'm not sure, obviously, what was said in the changing room after the game. And maybe he did criticise them there and maybe give them a bit of tough love, but certainly publicly didn't go into them. He said, they've had two bad games. The players have been fantastic for me. I'm not going to criticise them. And he also said, we didn't cope with Ireland being on the front foot, which in my view anyway, just points to a lack of fight and desire really to combat a team that want to come and take the game to you. Robertson's post-match quotes, nowhere near good enough. To wear a Scotland shirt should be an honour. We should fight for it. And tonight we didn't do that. Again, just points to really a lack of heart. We started playing long balls to a very isolated striker. So what does that point to, Gordon? A lack of composure or belief in the way that you're supposed to be playing or the way that you've been told to play, if you end up just panicking in possession and want to get rid of the ball as soon as possible? No bravery. No composure or confidence.
Yeah, could be any of the above, really. You know, I think that is always a worry, you know, especially when you've got a team that are quite well coached and well drilled, and you've seen that they have developed a style of play, that when those players suddenly almost publicly lose faith in that and start to, like you said, start to go against what the plan is, then that's really concerning. I would like to try and take the sort of helicopter view of these things. And I think, you know, coming into this camp, I said that, you know, my hope for the Scotland side is that we'd moved beyond a reliance on what a player's club form was, because they developed such a consistent way of playing as a Scotland team that, like, you know, you take Billy Gilmour out of a failing Norwich side and you put him in a Scotland midfield and he'll play well for Scotland because he knows how to play well and he's got the support of a successful team around him, and that's fine. And, you know, maybe that was naive, maybe that wasn't right, because, you know, you look at, obviously we watch all these Scotland players very closely and how they're doing, and between November and March, our players were flying. You know, Dykes was scoring, Adams was scoring, McGinn was scoring. You know, coming into those March games, we were in a very, very good place form-wise. And I think right now, you look at the squad that was out yesterday, how many players have actually come from successful teams or have actually been playing quite well? And it's not many out of those 11 players that started yesterday. I mean, Craig Gordon had a decent season. Andy Robertson had a very high performing season as always, but a crushingly disappointing end to the season. You know, McKenna played well. Ralston did well. But then, you know, Gilmour, McTominay, Adams hasn't scored for a long time. McGinn hasn't scored for a long time. Christie's form maybe tailed off towards the end of the season. I mean, there's a lot of players in there that really, yeah, we're not in the best moment club form wise. And yeah, maybe that just all came together, that you had too many players not in the right headspace, not in the right form. It just didn't work.
Graham, you've made the point already about our threat and the shots on target stats that you've rolled out. Saw a good tweet from Owen Brown, who looks at football through a very tactical lens and does quite a lot of good stuff, blogs and reports on the Scotland youth teams. He tweeted last night, the question I keep coming back to for managers of Scotland at all levels over the last year or two, but focusing here on the men's 18, is describe the open play goal you see your team scoring in the next fixture. We tend not to side through teams in open play. A couple of examples I've picked out were our McGinn's cracker against Austria. That was 3-4-5 quick passes and cut back from McGinn. And we scored a couple of really nice ones away to Moldova. I'm not going to count Shea Adams' one against Denmark because it was a quick turnover and a counter-attack on the halfway line. We didn't build the ball forward and go and cut a team open. So how massive and urgent is this for us to really start figuring out a way to break teams down and put the ball in the back of the net without the need for set pieces or opposition mistakes?
It's an interesting one around, you know, it's a really bizarre stat, right? Last two games, we've had 36 shots on goal and only two goals, right? 36 shots. If you take that little stat and you go, it's not because we're not creating chances, right? You can't, you know, unless we were just touting the ball from 40 yards for 30 times, but we weren't doing that. I think exactly that, some of the other things that were going on, and I watched this at the game at Hampden on, you know, on the weekend, and on Wednesday night. And there was so much, even when they were getting right close into the goal, you were just literally going to just hit it. You know, enough this walking across from left to right, just going round the five, round the goal. And then there was a cracking one. Shea Adams couldn't get out of his feet. It felt like he had about 10 minutes to put it in the back of the net and he couldn't get out of his feet. It was probably 70 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the lack of directness. If you get, and another one I kept shouting the other night was, going to hit the byline and cut it back. I hardly seen that. At all.
We've got little to no width in this squad. And I think that comes down to the lack of a plan B. The wingers that we have at our disposal aren't world beaters. We don't have Mane and Jota or Salah or anything like that, but we've got decent players that Clark has opted not to include. The Ryan Fraser conundrum is something that I don't think we know the full scale or story of. We've got James Forrest, who has lost his place at Celtic a bit and has never been a top performer for Scotland, but he's capable on the wing. You've got other boys starting to make their mark in Scottish football. Scott Wright, Barry Mackay's finding some sort of resurgence. I know that Clark doesn't view the MLS with a particularly positive mindset, but Lewis Morgan is doing okay. And I'm not advocating that these guys should all be Scotland starters, but is it worth having them in there in case we are struggling to break down a team and we need to try and figure out another way to do it? Because the lack of width in this squad is frightening.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think Stevie Clark plays with his formation more than he does, like you say, just throwing some people in and actually just saying, look, if we're going to stick to this, you know, whether it's the 3-4-2-1 or the basically that five, because he likes that. See those two wing backs, they should be bombing down. And the thing that wasn't happening was the overlap. Again, me and Barry were on this. We're sitting going, where's the overlap? Where's the winger and someone running past them to at least take a defender out so they can go to the goal or the overlap, get to the byline, cut it back? It was none of that. And then, of course, are they doing that? Because there's nobody in the middle to stick it away. And I can't quite work it out. You know, back to your point about Ralston, you know, the first 50 minutes, he's bombing down, right? And if you do that in the first 20 minutes, their defence is on the back foot because they're worried that these two wing-backs are going to Robbo as well. That's scary. Those two bombing down the wings and taking on and putting them on the back foot. And I think that's what needs to change. And I think throwing in some new players that might just cut it differently. They may not be the top class out of the, like McTominay, he's guaranteed a spot because he played 30 times for Man U last season. Does that guarantee a spot in the Scotland team? No, if he's not going to turn up.
I think that it does. I'm with you that it shouldn't guarantee him a place in the team. I think that Scott McTominay, the prestige of the club that he plays for, towards the top end of the Premier League, does mean that more often than not, he will find himself in the starting lineup for Scotland, whether it's at right centre-back or centre-mid. Now, his chances of selection, Gordon, are diluted pretty largely if Clark did move to a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or whatever, because in midfield, on contribution and history for the national team, probably going to pick McGregor, Gilmore and or Ryan Jack, probably all ahead of him. And I think this comes back to the square pegs round holes thing, just because he's a Man United player, how can he possibly be left out of the team?
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think what we could really do with is just having a very, very clear idea of this is the system we're going to play. This is the first choice in that position. If he's not available, this is his second choice. And because there's been so many shifting, like you said, of players from one to the other, that it's not helped us build that level of consistency at all. And yeah, you're right. Probably if Billy Gilmore had come off a decent end of the season and had been fit, Gilmore would have been starting in midfield. That wouldn't have been McTominay. But you're right. I'm struggling to see what the plan was in that the first choice is for McTominay to play right centre back against Ukraine and then to play in midfield last night. I'm not seeing what the plan is there.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There are other, maybe if we had beaten Ireland last night, we could discuss this with a bit more certainty, because now the Armenia game, it was always a must win. It's a competitive game. But I think for reputational reasons, Clark's goodwill, which is running out, I think, among the support, the knives are being sharpened a bit. And whether you feel that's harsh or justified, it's happening. Going by the scales of social media, people aren't happy with the way that Scotland have been playing over this year, or 2022 anyway, and the results that have come with that. That's two big games now where we've basically not turned up. Ukraine in the playoff and then Ireland last night. And we might be able to talk with a bit more certainty if we beat an Ireland on what Clark might do for the team against Armenia, because now there's going to be a lot of call for change based on what happened last night in the starting 11. But can Clark, if Clark does that, it's probably going to be a lot of players that have not seen much game time in a Scotland jersey. Maybe people like Ross Stewart or Brown, Lewis Ferguson, David Turnbull, it barely gets a ball for Scotland. I mean, these guys, can you all throw them in at once? I think we need to see them, but this is now a high-pressure game in a tough environment. Do they have the materials and the nutrients to go and do what's required, Gordon? We need to find out one way or another, but all of a sudden, with this game's increased importance than what it already was, is he just going to play with the same team?
Yeah, it's a real catch-22 situation, isn't it? Because also, I'm sure Clark would love to have the comfort of being able to say to guys like McGinn, McGregor, Robertson, take a night off. It's fine. You're okay. You've given plenty. You've had a long season. But I don't know that you can. And I mean, you know, there is a conversation to be had around a guy like John McGinn. Like, yes, he's an absolute darling of the support. He has contributed so much for so long, and he is such a phenomenal player. But this camp has not been productive for him. And it's always difficult to be critical in times like this, because, you know, you and I talked last night about these sort of sliding doors moments every now and again in football. And, you know, McGinn, he tries to put that header against Ukraine right into the corner to make sure the keeper can't get it. If he just gets on target, he scores. And then that game is completely different. Last night, he has two good shots from outside the box. Again, I'm more confident McGinn, if he slots one of those in, it goes to 1-1. Again, the game is completely different. So, but the fact is, he didn't score any of them. And we need him, especially when we're in a situation where we're not getting many goals from forward players. You know, more of our goals have come from defenders this year than forwards, that we absolutely need him to be scoring those chances. And yeah, maybe when he had that run of scoring so many goals, he was scoring above himself. And that was just a sort of one of those purple patches of form that comes along where everything sits for you. But again, that's the problem that this Scotland side have writ large, that you set the expectations, then people expect you to continue them forever. And they don't expect an up and a down. They just expect continued, consistent results. And sometimes that doesn't happen. But yeah, I don't know. There's so many difficult choices to make on Tuesday. You're right, because if he makes too many changes and then we get another bad result, he's in serious trouble. But if he doesn't, and then we deliver, then have we learned anything else about the players on the fringes and what they could bring? No, we haven't either. So, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do.
Looking at the team last night, Graham, I think that, okay, nobody got pass marks. I saw online, I can't remember which newspaper it was from, but saying that Ralston was the only outfield player to get pass marks. I think that's probably because he started the game with a bit of intent, but if we're being serious, the second goal was his fault. He's dropped his man, and Troy Parrott ran in to nod the ball home. But if we look at some players last night, I was surprised at Christie. I've long advocated for him to be a starter. I've always felt he had a bit of hunger and a bit of aggression to his game. Maybe he saw that with the booking that he took for the team last night. And I was actually worried at some point at the start. Maybe it was just before the third goal. He had a wild swipe or a late tackle or something. I thought he's got to be careful here. And then it was immaterial because Ireland stuck the ball in the back of the net just a second later. But I've always wanted Christie in the Scotland team. I'm with you, Gordon. I think McGinn is so important to our goal contribution, and therefore I'd have him as well. And I think Shea Adams is our number one striker at the moment, probably. And the three of them last night were dreadful. I can't believe that a midfield duo of Scott McTominay, who, although we've just questioned his credentials, but he's still a good player, alongside Callum McGregor, who I believe is the best player in the Scottish Premiership, were dominated. They were overrun by Ireland. So who out of these guys needs to be given a rest or taken out the equation? Even going back to the defence, one of the loudest shouts on social media last night was, where's John Souter, Graham? Why's John Souter been dropped from this team? And personally, I don't believe Jack Hendry's a Scotland starter across the back three in any of the positions.
I don't think... Right, the only way to look at this is it couldn't get any worse, okay? So you then turn it on its head and go, who deserves to start on Tuesday night? And actually, when you see the player ratings on one of the websites, the best was, well, like you say, I think that it was like four. Anthony Ralston got 4.05. He was the best scored out of 10. Right? That's how bad it starts. And by the way, it got all the way down to 2.75 for Grant Hanley. Right? That's how bad they played last night. In my head, it's actually up to Stevie Clark to turn around to them and say, are you going to turn up this week, right, in this game? Because it needs the fight. And he needs to ask his big players, like your McGinns and your Robbos, and say, is your head in the right space for this? Because at the end of the day, if he's, again, it's a pressure to get a playoff position out of this, a playoff out of this. But they're friendlies to work out, you know, what other options have we got before the next campaign, you know, and who's coming through the ranks, and, you know, how young's the squad, and what opportunities have they been given in game time? Like the game on Wednesday night. Two players coming on in 86 minutes for their, you know, for an outing for 5 minutes in a game like that was like, what's the point? Give them at least 15, 20 minutes and try and have a go. So I would say for Wednesday, I wouldn't have some of the big players out. I would, all the players you mentioned, give them a go. You've got a chance. It's Armenia. Come on. We should, even our, you know, the young and up and coming up hopefuls should play, you know, give them a chance. Give them 60 minutes. And if you need to throw on McGinn and Robbo to come on and rescue it with half an hour to go, maybe that's what he needs to do. And just like you say, play some players that give them a chance, but not a half time either. This, throw them on for a half, take them off at half time. I don't think does anything for their confidence or anything else. But actually have a plan and say, look, keep some of your big guys that can come in and maybe have to rescue it if we have to, but at least give them a good run out. And I think that's what he has to do on Tuesday night.
Well, Graham, it's a good point you make, because Clark's changes or the timing of them also draw quite a lot of ire from the support to delayed or hesitant in doing so, whether it's personnel or the system. People would like him to act quicker. I was chatting to someone last night. I'll keep the name out of it because I don't think they probably want to be named, but they said the point I'll always go to is look at Rangers in the Europa League. Van Bronckhorst was always happy to change to plan B after 20 minutes if it wasn't going well. They wouldn't have got to the final under Gerrard. They could only play one way. Now, is that similar to really what we're experiencing as Scotland fans at the moment? Because there's a comment here on Twitter from Roddy Cons, or at Roddy Cons, saying it feels like we're too welded to this system now. We create nothing in tack, but our subs are just more of the same. It's too predictable. For me, we need to have the option to play higher up or with natural width. Gordon, is there much truth in either of those comments?
Yes, I think there probably is. I think I certainly agreed with what Graham was saying earlier, you know, when he was sort of collating the shot statistics from the last few games. And, you know, it just sounds exactly like the conversation that we had at the end of the Euros, where we had about 40-odd shots in the group stage of the Euros, and that resulted in one goal. And that's just not good enough. And I think you're right as well, Graham, when you talk about how you watch our patterns of play, and it does just seem quite predictable. And, you know, sometimes that can be a good thing, where they're clearly, you can see what the plan is, you can see what they've drilled, what they've worked on, and they're delivering it, and it's something that's clearly practiced and rehearsed. But there can be a time where it becomes overly rehearsed and steers into the predictable. And you're right, the way they would go from fullback across the defence to fullback, but then it never really resulted in much at all. And I think we do struggle when we've got a defence that's going to sit deep against us, that we can't just, we don't have players that can beat a man and cut through someone and play incisive passes. And yeah, you're right. Like, I guess my perspective of the game last night was that once that third goal went in, it just felt like the game was gone. And yes, changes came, but they didn't change anything, because the die was cast long before that. So I'm still reticent to judge your Jacob Browns, your Ross Stewarts too much, because what could they do last night?
Well, that's a fair point, because, I mean, Jacob Brown and Ross Stewart are good players, but they're coming on to a system that Ireland have got by the throat, really. We were never going to score last night. It felt like we could have played for another few hours and not troubled Kevin Kelleher. We've already mentioned that our two best chances came from them passing the ball to us on the edge of their own 18-yard box. I mean, we brought on Jacob Brown, Stewart and Armstrong, who are good players, but this is not Spain having the ability to bring Pedro or David Villa off the bench 10 years ago. I mean, these are not guys who are going to turn the game on its head for us. There's a comment from Neil Doherty, author of Scotland Story World Cup 98 book, saying that Armenia were the worst team he's ever seen at Hampden, perfect chance to give Stewart full 90 minutes, try and get him off the mark, and didn't do it. And then he comes on last night with, I don't know, 20 minutes to go or so, something like that, when the game's already long gone. And they go back to the point there about Ireland just having us by the scruff of the neck and just bullying us really all over the park. That if you look back at the goals we've scored this season, Tierney against Poland, set piece. We scored a set piece against Austria, bundled over the line from Jack Hendry. We scored from a corner against Armenia the other night. It's good to be efficient and a danger at set pieces, but it's so much more important to be efficient and a danger in open play. And I really can't see where any of that threat or danger comes from, which is why it's such a head-scratcher, Graham, when you look at the players that we've got, not just in the squad, but in the attacking areas of the squad. How are we so blunt?
I think, and it's funny because it's only when you really tear it to pieces like we're doing it. You know, Stevie Clark was basically relying on not conceding, right? It was 1-0. I don't know what the stat is, but you know, how many times has Scotland scored more than two goals under Stevie Clark since he started? You know, if you were to do a percentage of that and see actually how many times have we actually scored twice in one match, you know, against that. And we were relying on our defence not conceding. And I think as soon as the defence gets a wobble, and like last night, an early goal, 20 minutes in, we're 1-0 down, you know, feel like we're chasing it. Or the defence is sleeping. And as soon as the defence cracks, and Craig Gordon made a few good saves last night, it could have been I think that ball was over the line that got out clear on the line as well.
Yeah, can we clear that up, by the way, a second? Does the ref not have a watch on that just it vibrates, like, just generally goal line technology? Not even VAR, just goal line technology. It doesn't have it.
They don't, not at that stadium. I think it's still sort of up to the National Association's discretion as to whether they pay the money effectively to install goal line technology.
Who decided that McGregor's was over the line? Is that a Hawkeye system, or did VAR take a look at that against Ukraine? Because that seems really unfair to me that something it can be done at some stadiums but not others.
No, you're absolutely spot on. But I think the one against Ukraine, there was a camera on the goal line, so VAR presumably had access to that and could tell the referee that's gone over the line. Because when you watching the game last night, all the replays, there was never the replay looking right down the byline.
So that's what the VAR had at its disposal. But last night against Ireland, they didn't have that. Yeah, I mean, nope. It was a goal. Surely that was a goal. So we got away with one there. It happened as well against Cyprus away from home. Remember, in one of Clark's, must have been his fifth or sixth game or something, they had a shot that hit the bar and bounced over the line and wasn't given. It's a couple of times we've got away with that now. But yeah, sorry, Graham interrupted you in your flow. Back to your point.
No, I was just going to say that. I mean, if he'd squared that, he was putting it in the side net. He kicked it back the way, do you know? And it was like, well, there's another one we've got away with. So I do think we need the change. I think you're totally right, Gordon. We are so predictable now. So predictable that they know how to play against us. And unless someone's on fire that's willing to do something a bit different, take Billy Gilmore at Wembley. He was all over the place. You know, he was brilliant. He just, you know, passing, taking the ball, going with it, passing it again, wee triangles all the way up the pitch. You know, and England were on the back foot because they went, oof, these guys are coming after us. And I just think in the last three games, that's not been there. It just hasn't. And I think it's down to people. Either it's too predictable, so we're just getting played off the park because everyone knows how we're going to do it. And we're playing the same people, we're playing the same tactics, and they're just setting up against us in a way that they do it. So that's where my head's at.
Well, this is it, and that's kind of a very interesting point, because you often see that in club football. I mean, if you remember when Sheffield United were first promoted to the Premier League, you know, they had this sort of unique way of playing where they did play with sort of three at the back, with kind of what they called overlapping centre-backs, effectively, where they did bring this sort of tactical innovation to the league. And their first season in the Premier League, they were phenomenally successful. I think they probably finished more or less mid-table, or even maybe just edged into
I think they finished 8th or 9th, Gordon.
Is it 8th, maybe? Yeah, exactly. So they took the league by storm with this real tactical innovation. But by the next season, everyone had seen it. They'd seen their trick and they'd worked it out. because they'd been able to consult the tapes, study it properly, and then the next season they were relegated. And I feel like that could be kind of what we're seeing right now. You know, we've played this system now for going on 2 years, and teams can effectively, they can do their homework, and they know what we're going to do, and they know what we're going to bring. And I think the game against Ukraine at Hampden was the perfect example of that. I mean, I read a really good write-up from Jordan Campbell in The Athletic afterwards, where he just pointed out how easily Ukraine were able to sort of take advantage of the spaces we were leaving and the system that we were playing, and just set players in acres of space and just take advantage of it. And they found us out in that game, and maybe Ireland did the same.
Now, I don't think this is this revisionism here is too harsh, but if you look back at our results over the past wee while, and there's a comment here from Liam Lobbin saying, I hear all the time about this being our best squad in years, but we only have a few credible wins under Steve Clark, right? So, and this is not me advocating for Clark to go personally. I'm not in that camp. I understand why some people might now be falling towards that side of the fence. For me, not yet. I think that it's perfectly justifiable to question, question some of the decision making and the approaches. But for me, he's earned more time than this. So it's fair, though, I think, to mention that if we look back at the teams that we have beaten, apart from Serbia, which was on penalties, and Austria away from home, granted the Denmark performance was great. You can maybe chat about if they had their foot off the gas about they'd already qualified and stuff. I personally would class that as still a very strong result in performance. If you look back at the other wins, though, it's all against teams that we should be and are beating. Now, Gordon, I know you've pointed out in the past that that's not something that Scotland have done for the last 20 years. We've always slipped up against the fifth or the sixth seed in the group on at least one occasion. We dealt with Faroes and Moldova just there in the qualifiers, which was good. But we had been beating teams that we should be beating. A lot of the other games, we are flattering to deceive, I would say. We should not have let, I know it's just a friendly, I think it's important for momentum, we should not have let that 2-0 scoreline go in Austria in the friendly in March. And I know that Poland scored a dodgy penalty in the last minute against us at Hampden. But then on the other side of the equation, you could say, oh, we only beat Austria away because we got a penalty that Dykes stuck away. It goes back to, I think, what we were just talking about there, predictability, needing a plan B. We've got at Haston DJ in the comments as well, saying exactly the same. We're too predictable. We need a plan B. And also, if you lose your duels all over the pitch, then you're going to struggle regardless of the setup and the formation that we've got, Graham.
No, I completely agree. And I was just taking a little look back, you know, in terms of results. We beat the Faroe Islands 1-0 away, granted. But do you know what I mean? Moldova 2-0. 1-0 again. That's world. That's European qualifying. We're beating teams that we should be beating more comfortably and not be so close to the grain. And I think that's down to. And here's a question for you: do we think we're too good? Back to this whole question of we've got great players, this stream of players that are now playing top Premiership football. You know, playing well in the Scottish Premiership. Have we now got to that horrible space where we think we're too good, and then doing the Scottish thing and that whole thing about Billy Gilmore being the next Billy Bannon this week, you know, just you're starting to crucify folk that are on their way up, that are learning their craft, and we're starting to butcher people. And I think maybe we've scraped it, you know, some big results to get into the Euros, but you look at the Euros performance apart from the England game, how good actually were we? And I don't know whether we do think we've just got overconfidence or just disbelief that we've got really, really good players and they should just be winning.
Well, coming on that point, Graham, Gordon, I know for a fact that you're not anywhere near the Clark out end of the spectrum. But a point being made here by Ross Laird, who's gone in studs up, really. I'll just put it to you. Clark gave Scotland structure and made us a unit and tougher to beat. I think that after the first round of fixtures against Belgium and Russia, that is undisputable. And then Ross goes on to say, that structure has fallen off the face of the earth. If Clark cannot adapt without Tierney, he should not stay in this job. Three insipid performances and bottling big fixtures. And I think those performances and big fixtures would probably refer to Czech Republic's at hand, and certainly Ukraine, and then either the Croatia or Ireland winner, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm still of in the headspace that this has just been an incredibly bad week. This has been a really, really, really bad week. We had a team coming into this camp, like I said earlier, with so many players woefully out of form, and they've struggled to live up to the standards that they set for themselves in the last year. And I've got to say, I really dislike a lot of this revisionist nonsense that I've seen recently. I mean, yes, Graham, you're right. You look at, you know, those games last year, and yes, it was only 2-0 against Moldova away. It was only 1-0 at home, you know, but those were still comfortable wins. You know, I mean, again, we've seen us labour to wins. I mean, yeah, the fair was away. We scored very late on, so that's probably fair enough. But at least they had the fight to get the win. The others were fairly comfortable. I think this is you're right. I'm very much in the Steve Clark continuing with the job. I think he's absolutely earned that. He's got the contract through to the end of the Euros qualifying, but he does have big questions to answer. He's got big challenges to solve, and the major one is, how do we play without Kieran Tierney in the team? How do we attack? How do we make the most of the talent that we've got in the team? And look, I have faith that he'll do that. He went away, obviously, during COVID and came back having decided this three at the back system would get the best of us. And results did improve. Performances did improve. I am hoping that we can write this off in 3 months' time as this was just a bad month. This was a bad June, a bad wobble, and we can get back to it. But the onus is very much on, you know, there's no doubting, there's no arguing that the Ukraine game was bad and Ireland was horrendous. There's absolutely no one will argue against those facts. So everyone can be in agreement that we need to be better than that. So that process starts on Tuesday, and then we'll see what we can do in September. But we're all in agreement that that wasn't good.
Well, let's talk about Tuesday's game then. We're recording this late afternoon Sunday, so there may be a few dropouts potentially before the game against Armenia. I know that Armstrong took a knock yesterday towards the end of the game. I think he played on, though, and Scott McTominay very early on in the game seemed to take a sore one, so depending on maybe how that has been looked after, maybe he'll drop out of the squad. We've got Gavin McCann and Twitter saying that he doesn't think it's much of a gamble to play some of these guys like David Turnbull, Aaron Hickey, Ross Stewart, and he's also listed, interestingly, who I think I would like to see to maybe show the players the way that it should be approached mentally and attitude-wise would be Alan Campbell. I think that we could do with some of that energy, fight and desire in midfield that he showed week in, week out at Motherwell, and which has made him an absolute fans' favourite at Luton Town, who had a great season in the English Championship. I replied or quote-tweeted a Luton fan account about 3 months ago, two, 3 months ago, saying it's great to see Campbell doing well. Maybe we'll see him in our squad for the Nations League. And I had Luton fans filtering through the comments saying he's been outstanding for us. Whether we go up or not, we won't hold on to him. So Alan Campbell, Graham, off the back of a great season in midfield, what do you think?
Yes, and I think it is, and I think we made this comment earlier, pick your form players. Who's, you look at the 11 from yesterday, who's actually, back to your point, who's in form? And if they're not in form, take them out. And then you look at folk like Alan Campbell, and he's played all season for Luton, fans' favourite. It might not be in the Premier League, but who cares? if you're able to sustain a full season, you know, playing at the top of the game, getting Luton to where they've got to, you know, and full of confidence, stick him in. What's the risk? And give him a game. And I like that comment about why does he not give people a 90 minutes and just say, do you know what, son? go and play your guts out for 90 minutes and see what happens. I'll not take you off. You've got 90 minutes to prove yourself, and I'm not going to take you off. And unless you have an absolute howler, you're going to get a good run out for Scotland because I believe in you. And I think that sort of mentality with the in effect the kids, you know, interesting. Troy Parrott, Obafemi, both are under 21. So there's the two forwards yesterday, both under 21. You know, going out there and scoring goals for their country. If we've got talent, they should be like Billy Gilmore, thrown in at the deep end, going, get them wet. There's your debut. Go and play 90 minutes and see what happens. Because for these guys to play for their country is amazing. You know, the guys that are tried and tested, it's part of their routine. And back to Gordon's point, I'm all for Stevie Clark as well. I think it's dead easy for 2020 hindsight, and it's a bad month. But he does have to try something different. And I think if he can get, you know, a good balance of youth and these experienced players that are on form, then come September, you know, hopefully, I don't care if it's 1-0 Armenia on Tuesday night, as long as we can hopefully navigate that one. And then you can run to September. And if he's tried out these sorts of players for the back half, the next three games, that would be a good result, because it would be like, right, we're going in 2 out of 3, no bad. And then you've got three games, but you've tried out some of these young kids.
What would be hypothetically then Scotland's form side at the moment? I'm just looking at the squad list just now. So from back to front, Gordon would probably be in goals. And then maybe it'll be Ralston probably at right wing back. Then Suter, McKenna, and well, who else? Hanley's not really been in great form. Jack Hendry's barely played at club level. So maybe that's a tricky spot. So probably a question mark there over the left centre-back out of the players who would be the form one. In midfield, it probably would be Cal McGregor, great season. Alan Campbell, great season. And then in front of them, behind Ross Stewart, would probably be Jacob Brown and, I don't know, did Turnbull end the season well with Celtic? Did he play much? I can't really remember. Christy, maybe, yeah. Good point, Gordon. So is that a decent Scotland team? Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. I think you know, building on what Graham said, I think I would certainly would like to see, yeah, some fresh faces on Tuesday night, because absolutely right. You know, we know what we're going to get more or less out of these dependable players that we've played so many times and they have played together so many times. You know, going into September when these crunch games come, we need to know who we can rely on, especially if our top guys are not in great form or aren't fit. So, and I think someone I would very much like to see on Tuesday, and I think we have really, really missed him, is Nathan Patterson at right wing back. I think Hickey, yes, was good against Armenia, but Armenia were terrible. But Patterson, you know, since the Euro, had really been developing some very, very good connections, you know, the way that he would interlink with McGinn. His crossing is so dangerous. You know, we've talked about his assists, his goal against Moldova. Yeah, I think we've massively missed him, and I would be very happy to see Patterson start on Tuesday.
Yep, with you on that. Ralston's done all right, played really well against Armenia. But as you say, Gordon, they were shite. And last night he started the game well, but switched off for the second goal, has to take his share of the blame for that. So what sort of consensus have we reached here during these discussions? I think a lot of the comments on Twitter and the three of us as well do want to see some sort of efficient alternative to when Tierney's not playing, probably formation-wise, 4 at the back, because without him, we really seem to struggle with this setup, and the evidence is now quite strongly backing that up against Czech Republic, against Ukraine, and now against Ireland. We've been poor in every single game. We want to see more cutting edge in attack, more shots on target. The responsibility for that will falls to pretty much the box midfield and the striker. Can't really pin that on the fullbacks at all, because we are seemingly relying on set pieces to create most of our goals this season. And we also just want to see generally more passion and heart and desire from the players, that was something that was so obviously missing last night. And I know that you said earlier, Gordon, Andy Robertson's post-match comments were interesting. He just seemed to flat out admit that they didn't fight for the shirt. That is baffling to me. Like, why would you not do that? I don't understand why you wearing a Scotland shirt or any international footballer. You would not give everything on the pitch. And Robertson's seemingly, I'll read the quote: "To wear a Scotland shirt should be an honour. We should fight for it. And tonight we didn't do it." What is the context there? Why?
Yeah, exactly, and especially because, you know, we've spoken so many times about the real improvements in the mental strength in this group, because they were weak mentally when Steve Clarke came in. You know, we had those games, Belgium, Russia, where we'd concede one and the game would effectively be gone, and very quickly it would be 2-3-4, and that was back to that last night. It was crazy that, you know, as soon as that first goal went in, there was not much of a reaction, and then the second goal followed, and then very quickly into the second half, the third goal, and that's it. That's the end of it.
In fact, we had a chat last night in the pub, Gordon. When has Clark Scotland side come from behind to win a game? Was it one game that we could think of? What was it?
Israel
at home, 3-2. Yep. Came from behind twice. Apart from that, we did think about Cyprus away from home, but we weren't behind in that game. They equalised for 1-1. So
there was, I'm pretty sure, the Kazakhstan game at home.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty sure. Yeah, they scored first and we won 3-1.
Yeah. So is that the only time that we've come back to win after conceding Kazakhstan and Israel both at home? I'm starting to feel a bit. Say that again, Graham.
I think that's the only ones, because you know, to win, you know. I think Tuesday's a test of character, right? So you're saying about summing it up. If they come out, and I said this, I don't mind getting beat by Ukraine. As long as you played for your shirt, you played your guts out, and you just got beat by the better team. When we go out, we don't play for the shirt, we don't play our best, and we just get thumped, which is what happened last night, then that's when people will say, and they will take Stevie Clarke on. And I think Tuesday night is a test of character. Can they pick themselves up? They've had a bit of a roller coaster the last three games. They really need to come out. And actually, that first 20 minutes is really important, because if their heads are down in the first 20, and even if it's 0-0 to half time, or God forsake, they actually score against us, I think we're in for a rough ride. And I hate it most of all is when, then, you know, and it's not the Tartan Army, because they'll go through walls for people, for that squad, but the press and the pressure, and then it becomes about Stevie Clarke, and it's all about who underperformed. They need a good performance where people are, you know, they're posting sevens, eights, outs, tens, and people have got a bit of belief again. I'm not looking forward to the summer if Scotland are again have a poor performance, and the lasting impression ahead of September is we're on a downer. They need a real good look at themselves, pick themselves up, and just say, look, this is our last game of the season. Let's just go out all guns. And I don't, even if it's all guns and we only win 1-0, back to Gordon's point, it's still a win. And when we charge on to September, forget the camp and move on.
It'll still be a win, but I think that we need to show more than that this game, Gordon, because I think, Graham, you make a good point that the press do have a field day with this sort of thing. And if we scrape a result against Armenia like we did in the Faroes when Dykes scored with 5 minutes to go, that will not be received well by the journalists and the press and the papers. We'll have it out for Clarke on that basis. Now, after the Ukraine game, Gordon, I said, I think Armenia at home, the result is more important than the performance, because we just needed to knit that in the bud, the Ukraine game, and just get 3 points on the board in the Nations League. It's about more than that this time. I don't think that we can stumble our way through this game over in Yerevan and come away with a 1-0 victory and look at it as a largely positive outcome. It will be a relief, probably, but I don't think that we can say that it has been fruitful or productive if we scrape a 1-0 win here. We need to show that we've got more about us than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the absolute key thing to Graham's point is just that the intensity has to be right. The aptitude has to be right on Tuesday night. You know, they have to, in arguably in the same way that they were in the home game against Armenia, where they could have chosen to give Armenia the ball because they were no threat whatsoever and then just get the ball off them and then build attacks. But we were intense. We hunted. We turned the ball over high. It was a very good performance. That's exactly what we need on Tuesday, because you're absolutely right. In the same way that, you know, between November and March, we were in a real cycle of positivity after Denmark, looking ahead to March, thinking we are flying here. We're doing great. Our players are scoring. Life is good as a Scotland fan. It's so easy to get trapped in that cycle of negativity. And if you're right, if we say come away with a draw against Armenia, that will be the mood music of the summer, right the way through to August. And then in September, it's just negativity. And that'd be the worst thing we could do right now, because we will need positivity, we'll need good performances in September. So I think it's really important that we sign off with a win, but it has to be a win delivered the right way, with a lot of effort and a lot of hard work, and hopefully a lot of chances created and quite a few taken.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll sign off with that. I didn't realise actually that we'd gone on for so long in this second Zoom meeting, guys. Sorry, I did say to you when we changed the calls, right, we'll just chat for another 10 minutes, but that's us running out of time already. So, like, thanks for coming on and conducting that post-mortem with me, Graham and Gordon. Hopefully we won't have too many more of these to do, especially not on Wednesday or Thursday next week. Hopefully it's a bit more positive, and we've got 6 points on the board ahead of 3 big games in September. All right, so hopefully on to better things, and thanks for coming on.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Sports Social Podcast Network.